Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hola, amigos! The Miguel Wise Show is back from our luxurious Mexico City studios. We will catch up on the top NBA story in Mexico. But first, well, Darlene has to bang. That's Spanish to do your thing.
The Mike Wise Show is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Mike Wise Show is hosted by a guy who played basketball atrociously for Hawaii Pacific College, which forced him into journalism. And, oh yeah, he wrote about basketball for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and ESPN. He's also a wise ass, and so are many of his guests. Right, Mike?
Gracias, Darlene. Last week we came to you from the Mexico City Bureau, and, you know, you can't beat the weather. Look, my family and I just celebrated our first Dia de los Muertos. That's the Day of the Dead. Several listeners wrote in and said they think the show is dead. It's not. We're with you, man. This week, my producer, Bruce Bernstein, joins me from New England as he watches with great concern since his Celtics have stumbled out of the gate. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Mike. I want to compliment you. I don't know how many folks will be able to actually see this, but I want to compliment you on your sartorial splendor with your sombrero with a bunch of, like, skulls across it and something that looks like an acid trip from the 1960s for your T-shirt. You're either really embracing the local culture or you become, like, some, like, sicko Satan worshiper south of the border. But before we go green... Yeah, we will go green. Let's go back to the future with those unforgettable Chicago Bulls. What do you say, Mike?
That sounds good, Bruce.
Can I kill the music now?
I love it. You can't get rid of this mariachi music. It's so good, right?
Yeah, yes, we can. Yeah.
So here's the deal. I have been enjoying the culture. Like, when you grow up in the United States, all you know is Halloween and candy and scaring the hell out of people. Down here, you get a little bit of that, but you get more like, yeah, they actually remember the dead. They actually care about old people. It's a weird thing. And anyway, we did like one of these offerendas where you do like a altar and you put your pictures of your the deceased people in your family or the pets you loved and lost up, and you put out things they liked. So it was great. You know, we did like Luli the dog, had little dog food. My dad and Christina's dad, unfortunately we had to use beer, but that's another story. And yeah, it was just it was a very good holiday, and we went to a parade with all kinds of skeletons. The kids loved it. Anyway, the bottom line is Scottie Pippen it should have been part of Day of the Dead because he looks like a skeleton some days. But he's resurrected the story of him and Michael in his new book, Unguarded, with my friend Michael Arkish, who I believe is going to be on the Catch and Shoot show. And I just, you know, I'm tired of the Last Dance talk, for one, because as much as being part of it was fun, I feel like I've already relived it. But Scotty went off on Michael. Your thoughts?
First of all, I'm going to cut Scotty a little bit of slack because the man's previous year has been filled with very sad, you know, kind of news. I mean, look, he lost
his
son. Yeah,
I saw that. Did that get in the book at all?
I'm not sure, but I mean, it very well might have. His son, Antron, passed away in April at the age of 26. And who knows what, I mean, look, you were talking about, you know, dearly departed folks a few minutes ago. Who knows what kind of, you know, PTSD type of effect that can have on a person. That said, Scotty's been bitter about Michael for a really long time. So, I mean, it may have been exacerbated by his, you know, grief, and I'm not a shrink, so I don't want to try and get too deeply into that. But look, Scotty, back in the day, I mean, look, we all remember The Last Dance, and we remember the terrible contract that he signed. And, you know, he was underpaid for a long time, although towards the end of his career, he signed a very lucrative contract when he was well past his prime. So, you know, while he may feel bitter about a lot of things in many ways, you know, that second contract that he got after he was done with the Bulls could have, you know, somewhat offset the money that he lost. But that said, I mean, look, Scotty doesn't feel like he got his due from Michael. But you know what, Scotty, there's only one Michael, you know, that's the way it goes.
Everybody has their own take on this, and being close to it and having covered those guys and gotten to know Scotty a little, I mean, but not to the point where we're tight like me and Shaquille or somebody. Like, but Scotty was one of these guys who there was always, he never had the social graces of Michael, you know, where he just like Michael could be running a con on you, but he could charm the heck out of you. He wouldn't even use words correctly because it was Michael Jordan using them. When he would go quite naturally, we would go, oh my God, Michael told us quite naturally. And it was sort of like, we were so enamored by all Jordan was, especially if he paid attention to you. And there is a magnetism about the guy. I mean, I remember being at the Berto Center in Chicago during the height of the Bulls dynasty. And if Michael Jordan was in, surrounded by a scrum of 100 reporters, and he often was, and he looked at you to answer your question, oh my God, it was like, it was you and Michael in the room together. It wasn't anybody else. And so I get it. You know, you're living in that shadow. A lot of people, because of their leanings, are saying, shut up, Scotty. You were lucky to have played with what many consider to be the greatest player of all time. I have a slightly different take. I think Scotty was a different guy. And I even saw a kind of a caustic interview with him in the New York Times this week, where he didn't like the reporter, and I didn't think the reporter, the guy who did the Zoom with him, did a great job. The interesting thing about Scotty is there is a lot more to him, but you have to almost draw it out of him. You know, he'll give you the narrative of the standoffish guy if you want, and you piss him off. But he's also a guy that, you know, he has some really interesting thoughts, and my take on it is, you know, not that Scotty's right in slamming Michael. It's his opinion. He can say whatever he wants. My opinion is, let's be clear. Everybody says Scottie Pippen was nothing and he never won anything without Michael Jordan. You know what Michael Jordan won without Scottie Pippen? Zero, my friend. Zero. So it was a 1-2 banana. And the top banana was Michael. And everybody knew it. And Scottie was the second banana. They know the Bulls don't win those championships without Scottie Pippen clogging the defensive lanes and, you know, sliding over to defenders and knocking away deflections like nobody thought he could. And some of the big shots and some of the big rebounds. You know, he was Scottie Pippen to this day has the perfect basketball body. If I could have a basketball body, I mean, man, he had the long arms. He was so sinewy. Yeah, you know. And yeah, he came up from a different route than Michael Jordan did. I never had any problem with Scottie Pippen going off. And, you know, Phil Jackson might have not been racist taking him out that time. And I would never agree with Scottie. And he's also walked back those comments. But look, however that play went down, you don't take Scottie Pippen, your best player. And, you know, Kukoc wins the game. Who cares? They still didn't go to the championship that year. You removed your best player from the court. No coach in his right mind does that. And so I could see how Scottie felt disrespected on that Kukoc play from, what would have been 95?
94, I believe. It was 94, the first, okay. It was the first, the year the Knicks went to the finals, I think.
Near the Knicks, yeah. Okay, year. So... So whatever, you know, like, look, you were part of a dynasty. You didn't get paid till later, but he's right to some extent. And he brings up some really interesting points. I don't know if it's ever been confirmed that Michael got $10 million. I wouldn't be surprised. He was the editorial director. He and his people were the editorial directors of his own documentary. Can you imagine if Muhammad Ali got to be the director of his own documentary? You would have thought he was a saint. Liked Ken Burns' portrayal better because he gave you the full Ali. And everybody in Ali's camp knows that's who the guy was, and they had no problem with it. So a person should never have control, editorial control over their own documentary, because it doesn't give the real picture.
Well, it was more of a business decision than it was an editorial decision. But see, the thing about Scotty, you know, people maybe don't really remember, Scotty was on that original Dream Team. So, you know, that was the greatest team ever put together. Scottie Pippen was on it. And not only was he on it, he was a major participant. I had some limited dealings with Scottie when I was at ESPN. He came to us for a while as an NBA analyst on some of the ABC games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to give Scottie some credit here, because when he first started out doing, you know, analysis, you know, Scottie wasn't always the most polished when it came to how he would speak. You know, he had, you know, he's from a, you know, a rural area, and I'm not putting down rural people, but just simply a lot of times we speak the way people we grew up with spoke. I mean, when I grew up in the Massachusetts area, I had this wicked bad Boston accent, which I, you know, was able to lose, you know, along the way by not living there. But Scotty,
you park your car in the Harvard yard.
That's right. And there's nothing worse than a fake Boston accent. There is nothing worse than a fake. So Scotty, I'm gonna give Scotty some credit here, because when he first started out, I mean, he sounded, you know, he didn't sound so good, but he really worked on it. And towards the end of his TV time, when he was working with Rachel Nichols on The Jump, he was so much better. I mean, he always was able to make good points, but his delivery became much more polished, and he sounded, you know, he still sounded like Scotty, but he just sounded better. He was a better version of Scotty. So, you know, he's got the chip on his shoulder, no question about it. But, you know, look, when it doesn't always go our way. I mean, you and I have both been, you know, second fiddle to people that maybe we wish we hadn't been second fiddle to. That's the way it goes. That's life, right? I mean,
who have I been second fiddle to? I have no, who I can't think of anybody. Maybe Wilbon, Kornheiser, Sally Jenkins, and Thomas Boswell. When I was a columnist at the Washington Post, I was like, I batted ninth on Murderer's Row. You're right. And maybe at the New York Times when Maureen Dowd was there, and Frank Rich, and every other sports columnist, like our good friend Harvey Ariton, maybe everywhere I've been. You're right. Never mind. Go ahead.
Doesn't mean that you're not a Hall of Fame caliber journalist. It just doesn't always, you know, look, sometimes we think more of ourselves than the rest of the world thinks of us. Although I think extremely highly of you, Mike. And in spite of that, you know, hat that you had on before, I give you great credibility. We're going to see that hat in the promo, by the way. That thing is going back on for the promo.
I don't know why this whole pod, and like, you know, we put some of them, like the Stern one and Jeannie Buss, on the YouTube. I don't know why the every week I'm not on YouTube. My face, my mannerisms, that could sell this thing a lot more than the content I'm giving.
You want to know something? When we decide which of today's topics is going to be our quick hitter, that's going on YouTube. So I want you to put your best sartorial foot forward when we do that. So, you know, because we've got a bunch of topics we can go down, and, you know, we can just, I can give you some of them now. We can decide which one's going to be our quick hitter, and then you can, you know, you can dress for the success.
Yeah. Give the folks the rundown. Give them the PTI screen.
All right, so we've done the Scottie Pippen. We're going to talk about the Los Angeles Lakers of the East, also known as the Washington Wizards. we're going to talk about the hot mess in Boston with my beloved Celtics. We're going to talk about the Miami Heat, who are just like killing it right now. We're going to talk about the West Coast version of the Lakers. Are they maybe getting it together? We're going to talk about the Knicks, who, by the way, let's tap the brakes on the Knicks after losing to Indiana by like 13, Indiana previously like 2-6. Talk about Steph Curry. We can talk about refs not calling fouls on flailing shooters. I mean, if there's any one of those topics that you just know that's going to be the one, we'll make sure to have a wardrobe malfunction and change before we start that.
All right, good. I personally want to get your Celtics out of the way as quick as I can, because I know that most of our listeners don't care. And they just really, they only listen to what you say about the Celtics because they feel sorry for you. And they're pathetic. Brad Stevens is a hellish GM. He's a heavenly coach. I think he's been found out. And bottom line is Jason Tatum is the most privileged, entitled, non-MVP candidate in America. Like, what is it with that begging for these calls? I mean, it's like LeBron circa 2005. Every time he gets fouled, it's as if three people with assault rifles got him from the ceiling. I mean, he flails. He's all over the map. He's complaining. I love Jason Tatum. I want him to be a MVP candidate one day. But I just don't understand how you can act like you deserve something when you haven't taken what most people would agree is the greatest franchise in the history of the NBA to, they haven't been to the NBA finals since 2010. We're going on 12 years. The Celtics haven't been in the finals. That's gotta be a record.
I don't know if it's a record or not. I mean, they had a pretty big dry spell after the 1986 championship. It was a while. But that said, I agree with you about Jason Tatum. He's a brilliant offensive player. He is an indifferent defender. He doesn't move his feet that well. He has capabilities as a defender. I've seen him block shots, okay? But in my mind, I think Jason Tatum thinks, well, if I block two shots tonight, I had a good game defensively. But meanwhile, there's people waltzing to the basket for layups because their team defense has not been in sync even a little bit in the early part of the season. I know Marcus Smart kind of, you know, had a statement a few days ago about, you know, the two J's got to pass a little bit more, whatever. I think what he meant is they got to pass it to me a little bit more. but Marcus Smart, I'm always going to cut that guy some slack because
he works like nobody.
Yeah, he's a relentless, just a buzzsaw. He's like a better version of Patrick Beverley, okay? Just a pest, a brute, a perimeter terror on defense. So, but for me, I look at that team and I say, okay, their offense could have a little bit more flow to it. That is true. But their defense to me and their lack of rebounding is far more of a concern for me. And I believe that, and this is basic basketball 101, Mike, and you know this better than anybody. When you're a good defensive team and you pound the boards, you can overcome poor offensive nights. You can win a game in the low 90s or the 80s, even if your shot's not falling, if you're willing to put in the work. And I don't
How much see... is that? How much is it? How much of that is coaching, though?
Well, you got a rookie coach and he's probably got a new system in there. And that's why I say I'm not ready to jump off the roof of the TD Garden just yet. They had a win against Orlando on Wednesday night. Although we're taping this on Thursday early afternoon. They have Miami tonight on a back-to-back. Yeah, they can somehow or another have a good performance against Miami, maybe eke out a win. Then I think that might kind of propel them in the right direction. But if they have a stinker against Miami where they're out of it early or they just get blown away in the fourth quarter, it will further expose some of their early season flaws. Their best player really all around so far has certainly been Jaylen Brown, but Al Horford, who's like almost as old as us, he's played really, really well. And I think, he's a guy who doesn't talk a lot. He just goes out there. He works. He's leading the league in block shots. He's 35 years old, right? He's just been balling.
Al Horford is leading the league in block shots.
I believe in blocks per game. Yeah. If he's not leading, he's definitely in the top two or three because it's early in the season. So one guy has a great game. Those numbers can move a little bit, but he has just been crazy on defense. They need to follow his example. Follow what the old guy's doing, Mike.
Coach Udoka's got to get his act together.
He does. You know? He does.
I know you're not Brad Stevens out of the box, but you got to get these guys to work harder. That's all it is. That's all there is to it. I'm of the opinion, same with the Knicks, for the last, you know, feels like a millennium, but it's been about 20 years. You know, if the Knicks aren't in the hunt in the East, it's not the East. If the Celtics aren't in the hunt in the East, it's not the East to me. It's never been the East. And so I'm not one of these people that likes to go through cycles of good teams and bad teams. Okay, Trae Young's a great player. I want to see Atlanta get to the finals one day. Great, I'd love to see it happen. But not at the expense of the Knicks and the Celtics being lousy for another 10 years. That's important. The Knicks look like they were on the path to something. I don't know, you know, Tom Thibodeau is a very good coach. He has a shelf life of 3 years everywhere he goes. And that's who he is. And I know, you know, Tibbs will join the show one day. It'll probably be after he's fired by the Knicks because he doesn't like to talk during the season. But nonetheless, I like them. I think they have some great parts. I'm still blown away. I know they lost last night, but I'm still blown away. The Wizards are playing some basketball off the top. And, you know, that trade for Russell Westbrook and half of the Lakers roster doesn't look bad right now. We're talking Kyle Kuzma. We're talking Montrezl Harrell. Montrezl Harrell is a guy that he's like an X factor for any team he goes to. You know, he's like the Draymond Green kind of character where he just, if you put his minutes into a statistical analysis machine, you'll find that when he's on the floor, good things happen for his team. And so I like the Wizards right now. I like the Wizards. If Beal gets his act going, anything can happen with them. And I'm not saying finals. I'm saying they could go to the second round this year.
I've watched both of their games against the Celtics, which they won both of them. Okay. Montrezl Harrell.
Well, that's not hard. Beating the Celtics right now is like seeing a five-year-old on the street and asking him for candy. And if he doesn't give it to you, backhand him. That's what the Celtics are right now. They're the kid who gets their candy stolen from them.
Somebody takes their lunch money and beats them up. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean,
that's like a Brockton
story. I don't know if you ever went to one of those schools. The kids at my school that took their lunch money, they took their parents' lunch money. These kids were so tough.
but Montrezl Harrell, Kyle Kuzma, KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, put them with Bradley Beal and Spencer Dinwiddie, who came over there. You know, I mean, that is a very strong starting, well, six, really, because Trez has been coming off the bench. But that guy's all guts and heart and blood and guts. So there's this toughness to that team that is sort of a new thing there. So and also their coach, Wes Unseld Jr., off to an excellent start there. So we're happy for him.
Yeah, and I remember him being like, not the video coordinator, but he was sort of so lowly on the totem pole on the Wizards coaching staff like years ago. Like he was just like, wait, you just got the job because your dad. And the guy was quiet. He was humble, always nice, and never said anything and just put his nose to the grindstone. And lo and behold, paid his dues and now is an NBA head coach. And I don't know, I'm really happy for him. As I am all these guys that I knew younger when they were like literally, you know, I've got at least 20 years on Wes Unseld Jr., but to see him become like all grown up as a head coach, it's kind of cool. It's, you know, it's like anybody, like it'd be like you seeing somebody in TV that, you know, just started out real green and all of a sudden they're hosting their own show. It's cool. It's fun.
Or running a network.
Well, and the ones that you don't think should be doing it too. Well, we could go on about that for all day.
No names.
I didn't sign any NDA. Maybe you did. No, go ahead.
No, but one of the things that I like to watch when I'm watching a game, I like to watch how coaches handle themselves on the sideline. You know, how do they? And one of the things I really liked about Wes Unseld Jr., I really like his sideline demeanor during the game. He doesn't look like a rookie coach. He looks like a guy who knows he belongs. Yeah. He's been there for a while. He knows how to comport himself. He's not screaming at referees. He's focused and he's on top of it. So I think that bodes very, very well for his team and his future as a coach, Mike.
No, I agree. I'm all about it. I don't know if LeBron James is going to turn this season around. My gut is if he's healthy and Anthony Davis is healthy and Russell Westbrook eventually adjusts to that team, I think they're as good as anybody in the West, but that's just me. The Warriors and Utah have started really fast. Steph Curry is Steph Curry. When he's on and he's just, I don't know, he's just changed the game with how far he can shoot from and how accurately. And I'm just, every morning I get up and the Warriors play, I get the Lakers full highlights on my phone. And my son gets up at 6 a.m. here in Mexico City to get both of them to get on a bus at 7. I just give him the phone, make breakfast for him, and I say, go look at these highlights. And he's mesmerized by Luka Doncic, Steph Curry, sometimes LeBron, and he loves Giannis. I think those are his top four right now.
You know, we always think of Steph Curry because he has such a youthful face as being, you know, kind of eternally young. He's 33 years old now, and he's playing his best all-around ball that I can remember. I mean, he's shooting, he's making just under 5 threes a game, which is probably right up amongst his best numbers ever. He's averaging nearly 27 a game, 7.6 rebounds a game, okay, and just under 7 assists. So this guy's playing the all-around. I mean, those are like LeBron James numbers when it comes to all-around numbers. And the team is 6-1. Bravo for the Warriors. Bravo for Steve Kerr. Hopefully when Klay Thompson eventually returns, that's going to help put those guys back into to a permanent spot near the top of the West.
Well, and also it just goes to show you Bob Myers, the GM, where he had a couple tough years trying to fill in, trying to get past the dynasty days, move some people around, bring somebody Andre Iguodala back, character guy. Otto Porter, his numbers haven't been great, but I can't tell you what a presence a guy like that is, not only in the locker room, but on the floor. He's just a solid guy. He knows how to play the game. He understands he's not the number one guy, and he's just like he's a great role player, you know, not in the same vein as Draymond Green, because I think Draymond does multiple things, but in his own way, Otto Porter is a real special pickup for them, and it goes to show you that the chemistry, you can't shake a finger at chemistry. You can get all the stars you want, but if the right parts aren't put around them, that team's going nowhere.
Now, I will say this. I mean, in looking at the Warriors' early season schedule, they haven't had the toughest schedule so far, but I don't even really care, because how you set the tone for your season coming out, winning 6 out of your first 7, the only game they lost was in overtime, okay? So they could very easily be undefeated at this point. So setting the tone early, I think matters more, and good for them that they had a less of a challenging schedule to begin, because now they got some wind at their back, and I think that's going to help propel them. And, you know, another team that's in that mode is Miami, Mike. Miami looks like a bunch of badasses out there to me. They're good.
They're just I can't say enough about Spo. Eric Spoelstra is going to go in the Hall of Fame one day, not just because he won 2 championships as LeBron's coach in Miami and Dwayne Wade's, but he's just such a solid guy, and he understands his bench and how to use him. A lot of people would start Tyler Hero. They would use him in a different way. He knows that's where Tyler Hero is. You know, he knows that's his role. He knows his players' roles. And who knows, you know, Jimmy Buckets, Bam Adebayo, Kyle Lowry now, Duncan Robinson, who I was surprised didn't sign somewhere else, get a mega deal. I mean, they are a part of a complete team. Are they an NBA finalist this year? Probably not. I thought the COVID year was more of a fluke, and I still am not going to write off anybody outside of Philadelphia. Well, I'm Philadelphia with Ben Simmons, yeah. But I'm not going to write anybody outside of Milwaukee off until I see better. And if Kyrie ever gets vaccinated, who knows? But all I'm thinking right now is if Miami does so much work early and really builds up, they're going to give themselves home court advantage for a couple rounds. And that's going to mean a lot in this year's playoffs, a lot, because all the fans are going to be back.
I believe that, you know, when I look at the way that team is constructed, it kind of reminds me, I'm getting a little bit of a baseball analogy here, where it's like great baseball teams are strong up the middle, right? They have good pitching. They've got good defense, good, you know, center fielder, catcher, whatever. The key positions are all, you know, manned by solid people. And that's what I'm looking at with Miami. I'm looking at Jimmy Butler, who is an MVP candidate right now. He's averaging 25. He's a lockdown defender. He's tough as nails. He's kind of like the spirit of, you know, the spirit guy on that team. Bam Adebayo, who's like the quintessential modern NBA big. He's averaging like 20 and 14. He's a really good passer. He's aggressive. You can run offense through him. He can do a lot of things. You mentioned Tyler Hero. Guy's just a bucket, comes off the bench, ready to score, and does. He's averaging over 20. And then Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry's like the big addition to that team from last year. Kyle Lowry is like, I mean, you talk about a guy who fits into the quote unquote Heat culture. It's Kyle Lowry. I don't know that I've ever seen a grittier individual on an NBA court than Kyle Lowry. He takes charges. He makes big shots. He's not the biggest guy, but he's just like fearless. This is a Pat Riley.
Yeah. You know, I was just going to say right here. This is Pat. This is like a smaller version of John Starks, you know, a much smaller version of Anthony Mays. Like think of any tough Vashawn Leonard. I mean, guy couldn't do anything but shoot threes, but he played D like nobody's business. James Jones, all the guys shoot. Udonis Haslam. I mean, come on.
Alonzo Mourning.
What?
Alonzo Mourning.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they all wore their heart on their sleeves. People used to say, you know, college basketball coaches used to say of Mike Krzyzewski and Bob Knight back in the day, they said, if anybody stayed more than 2 years at Duke or Indiana, don't take them. Because the thought was not that they were around too long. You know, this was before the one and done area, but it was like the idea was that they extracted so much. Those two coaches were so demanding and extracted so much out of their players that they just wouldn't have it when they got to the NBA, like a lot of guys do. They just wouldn't have it. That's the same with Miami in the NBA. If someone's been in the Miami organization for more than 10 years and they're not like LeBron James, I don't want them because the Heat has extracted every drop of emotion and heart and soul out of them. And so, you know, so, but whatever.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's the kind of place where you'd want your kid to play if he wasn't the greatest player in the world. He just wanted to be part of a great team and accomplish something.
And there's no state income tax in Florida.
Yeah, that too. And plus, like, if your kid was an NBA player, like, tell me you wouldn't be getting hoochies left and right in the bar. I'm kidding, honey. I'm kidding. God. Ugh. Okay. All right. Let's close this out with something that I really want, something near and dear to my heart, flopping. The NBA was becoming World Cup soccer, where every foul was as if you'd been, you know, assaulted by eight people, and you know, and you wound up at the, at the police precinct, not knowing who to accuse because so many people had hit and pounded and stomped on you. That's what these guys in the NBA were doing. It just became, everything became about acting. It used to be about drawing fouls and getting hit and getting to the line. All of a sudden it became about pretending you got hit so you could get a call on a guy. And I like that officials are not calling bullshit fouls and or bullshit fouls, and they're not rewarding the floppers and the flailers. Agreed or disagree?
Oh, I agree with you completely. And one of the benefits of that, because there are fewer whistles, the pace of the games has been much better. I haven't done any research on this. This is just strictly anecdotal, but it seems that the games are taking less time from beginning to end because you don't have as many trips. You know, you're not seeing teams shooting 50 free throws in a game, going to the line 20, 25 times in a game. That just crushes the pace when that's happening all the time. Particularly, and I agree with you, like, you know, James Harden was sort of the prime example of guys who were able to sort of, you know, get these like fouls, these crafty fouls where he'd position himself in such a way, whether it was kicking his leg or just kind of doing the up through with the shot when a guy's like guarding like this, and he would do one of these deals. It's great to not see as much of that. I think the scoring is down as a result. The pace is up, and I'm with you 100% on that. I like the product better this way. Now, again, there is such a thing as going in the wrong direction too much with that. But so far, I think they're definitely, you know, in a good window when it comes to that. Look at you.
I am so frustrated by the flopping. And I've talked to my friends in Mexico, Ciudad de Mexico, to you, Mexico City to most of the world. But they call it Ciudad de Mexico.
I took Spanish in high school, Mike. I
did. Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien.
Okay. That's it? That's all you got?
Gracias. Granada?
If I see this flopping anymore, I am going to get some of my Mexican soccer goons down here to take some of these NBA players out. And I'm not kidding.
Okay. All right. Have you played any pickup ball on the hard courts outdoors in Mexico City yet? Have you and the boys gone out there and had any competition?
Yeah. We played some guys from Costa Rica that were visiting this weekend, and Oliver was lighting it up on the. They have this little court outside a shoe store that they sort of let people go play for free. It's a behind closed. These bars, so no one really knows it's there. And so I go in there and take them in there, and they got chain link nets, old school.
Like the old YMCA nets. I love that.
Yeah. And I tell this kid, his name was Deshaun from Costa Rica. He was 13. And I told him to just work over Oliver. And he did. He beat him up pretty bad, but Oliver eventually adjusted. And I'm trying to get him to work on his left hand. Left hand is a separator at 11 years old, because every dad should have a child that can make left hand layups. It's important for everybody. It is depressing, man. People just aren't into the pickup game like they are back there. You know, but I'll tell you what, these kids in the park, I can watch them play soccer all day. They'll be seven years old, man. They like their feet or their hands. It's amazing.
I'm sure, you know, the average kid that you watch would be a superstar in most American high schools at soccer.
Oh, clearly. Well, and that's the other thing. Oliver's getting an inflated sense of his own worth down here. He's going to go back there and basically have his shot thrown into row D by many players when he gets back there.
All right, let's go. Time to stick the landing.
Let's knock it out here, my friend.
Okay, Mike, we have a new editor, Drew Rich, and he has been a great addition to our team. So we'd like to thank Drew for working his magic at the keyboard.
Thank you, Drew.
Check out our other Pure Hoops Media shows. Catch and Shoot 2.0 with Otto Strong and Aaron Berlin is back. And I joined Otto and Aaron for a discussion of the Celtics issues, Zion Williamson's health problems, which we should definitely take up in an upcoming show, and a segment on how the presence of NBA-sanctioned gambling will affect the type of information that fans should expect to get from the teams and the league, right? Load management, you know, stuff like that. Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Monica McNutt and King McClure is back, and they debated which team is better, the Knicks or the Chicago Bulls. They also teed up some college hoop with the little sizing up of the top 10 teams in men's and women's hoop. BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman hope to return soon with the Pure Hoops podcast on Fridays. And of course, a new Mike Wise show every week. And, you know, if you'd like to hear some choice discussions on all of our shows, as you well know, go to YouTube, search for Pure Hoops Media. Mike, I love that hat, baby.
Look, get vaccinated. And if you already are vaccinated, get your booster shot. Don't be like Kyrie Irving. Until next time, America, world, Mexico. Adios, aloha. Hasta luego, mi amigos.
See ya.
The Mike Wise Show used to be called the Wise Ass Show, but it remains a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.